Look at you. Headphones in, totally relaxed, holiday mode has been fully engaged, and you haven't even reached the airport yet.
We are now arriving at Gatwick Airport. Thank you for travelling with Gatwick Express.
Glide to Gatwick from London Victoria in half an hour on your all-new Gatwick Express. Save 10% on easy barcode tickets straight to your inbox and breeze through the barriers. Book now at gatwickexpress.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome off the post. Actually, the game. Welcome to the game. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Nico Riesgo. I don't know where my mind was at, Nico. How are you?
Russ Cohen, my man. You must be thinking about the Hall of Fame. Kind of what a big weekend we had here.
Yeah, it was a great weekend for baseball. I mean, I watched it. I watched both acceptance speeches for Griffey and for Piazza. Just tremendous stuff. What you played a little with Mike Piazza, I guess, in Florida Instructional League. So what was that like for you to see that?
It was awesome. I did watch it. What an ambassador for the game. Definitely think he deserves to be in the Hall. What a Hall of Fame person he is. I listened to his speech. You can see his heart. He loves his family. He loves his game. And he loves, his godfather, Lasorda, gave him the opportunity. It's kind of interesting to hear that he even quit at one point.
I didn't know about that.
And walked away. Yeah, I walked away, and he was about to give it up because he was just really struggling at the low A level. And if you look at anybody who was made in the game, he's somebody who was definitely made by the game. When he came in, I knew him when he's like a 62nd rounder. He's about 135, 145 pounds, and really just kind of worked hard, and then he struggled. I mean, if anybody struggled, they really couldn't find a position for him to play. It was really frustrating for him. And then someone just said, hey, why don't you try catcher? We could probably hide you there. And it actually worked for him.
Yeah, the one thing, the mark of Piazza that I'll always remember is the home runs he was able to hit to right field. Like, those are crazy because – like, even in softball, me trying to hit opposite field, I could do it pretty well. But in baseball, to know that it's a split-second thing and you're going to hit it the other way, and for power, with guys throwing 90 miles an hour, that's something.
Yeah, he kind of made it a skill. And, you know, he got ragged a lot because a lot of people say he was just late. You know, he couldn't really turn on a fastball. He was always late, and he just didn't have a quick enough bat. But you know, the bat on the ball, and like I said, with the power and the angles that he put on the ball, he definitely was able to get enough spin to get the ball out of the ballpark. And what a great quote by Candiotti, who said, you know what, I don't care how many pass balls you get by, just hit me one of those three run homers.
Yeah, but he was good at blocking the plate. Just by the time he was a Met, he wasn't throwing guys out anymore, but that was okay. He was still calling a good game. He was still making good plays at the plate, like if there was a play at the plate. So, unfortunately, he was concussed a lot, too. He didn't talk about that, but I can remember so many times when he had backswing concussions. It's a tough position. But let's switch over to Ken Griffey Jr. Other than Willie Mays, probably the best center fielder I've ever seen, and I only got to see Willie Mays at the end of his career, like, you know, his last 4 or 5 years. So, Griffey just, you know, you watch some of those catches, and it's just, and I was watching with somebody, we were just in awe of the home runs he would steal. Like now, guys, when you're talking about him stealing home runs, sometimes they get a little bit over the fence and knock it back, and sometimes they catch them. But he was going like 4 or 5 feet over the fence to get some of those. Like, you really, other than Steve Finley, nobody nowadays makes that play over the wall like Griffey, not even Lagares.
Yeah, no, he made it look easy, and it was interesting to say how, you know, he really worked hard, and, you know, he got really dogged for being kind of like, seemed like he didn't work hard enough because he made it look too easy, and, you know, just because when you have a lot of talent, just because it looks easy doesn't really mean you're not working hard. You're working hard just as much as everybody, but he had one of those styles where he just made it seem so easy.
Yeah, I was lucky. I got to cover both Piazza and Griffey when they came through here in Philly, and at the time when I was credentialed. And I'll tell you, the thing about Griffey was he did all he could to stay in the game, and he didn't have a chiseled body at the end. Like when he was with Cincinnati, he wasn't looking like one of those guys that was maybe getting a little help. And so that was something I always sort of appreciated about him, was that he just went with his talent. And you could see he actually went into decline. He didn't have any kind of crazy years when he was 38, 39, 40 years old, like years that were maybe better than some of his prime years. And yet he still made it, still hit over 500 homers. Again, with a guy his speed hitting over 500 homers in center field, almost unheard of other than, you know, Willie Mays and maybe one of the two players.
Yeah, I don't even think Eric Davis, could even you can put him in that category. He was another great center fielder that I got a chance to see. But,
yeah
nothing like Griffey Jr. I think he had the most votes out of anybody in the history of the Hall of Fame.
He did. Seaver was the previous leader, and then Griffey was the leader. And you got to give him credit. And, you know, he hit over 50 homers a couple times, hit over 40 a bunch of times. But, you know, in his last years, you know, he hit 30, 18, 15, 19. So, you know, he did age normally. And so I give him a lot of credit. Steals-wise, you know, he never had more than 24 steals in a season. But that's not because he couldn't. It's just because they didn't want him to. Like, he's a guy that could have stole more if he wanted to.
Yeah. And like I said, he was either a home run hitter. He probably wasn't. He didn't hit a lot of singles. He had a lot of doubles. He probably wasn't in a position to steal a lot of bases just with his talent. One of the things I want to talk about, though, I was really surprised on Piazza's decision to go in as a Met. Because when I think of Mike Piazza, I think of the Dodgers. The Dodgers made him. I mean, he wouldn't even be a Met if it wasn't for the Dodgers. I mean, the Dodgers spent
so much time
training him. He spent so many years with the Dodgers developing and so many great years there and with his godfather. For him to make a decision to go with the Mets, he was only with the Mets. How long was he with the Mets?
No, it was a split time. He was with the Mets and Dodgers an equal amount of time. The issue is when he was with the Dodgers, he won the batting title, Rookie of the Year, all that. I've chronicled that in my book, Baseball's Best Rookies. He's in there. Got a great quote from Piazza from that when the Philly Sports Writers, I'm part of the Philly Sports Writers Association, had him for, you know, dinner. He was very great and gracious. But here's the thing. The Dodgers didn't leave the Dodgers on good terms, and they never really reached out again after he retired as a Met. And so I think those were the big things. Like, look, his last team was the Oakland A's, but when he retired, everybody thought of him as a Met. You know, he made it to the World Series with the Mets, never did with the Dodgers. He had the 9/11 homer with the Mets. He had so many memorable times, but if the Dodgers had reached out to him and tried to sort of make him part of the organization again, I think he may have had a different decision, but the Mets immediately reached out to him. If you remember at the closing of Shea Stadium, he was right there with Tom Seaver. So you knew how this thing was going to play out at that point. And that was simply because the Mets reached out, and I think the Dodgers didn't do a good job with that.
I agree. Because, you know, I don't think the Dodgers have a post Mike Piazza bobblehead night. I mean, I see the Mets are having Mike Piazza bobblehead night. The Mets are kind of welcome in.
Yeah, I'm going to be there Saturday. I'm going to be there Saturday when they retire his number. I was there for the Tom Seaver number retirement, and now I'll be there again for Mike Piazza, and that's going to be a great moment. And, you know, to see that 31 get retired. But you're right, the Dodgers haven't had those kinds of things, and so that's why I think it happened. You know, I think that's the way it worked out. I mean, Tommy Lasorda didn't even speak on Mike's behalf. Now, Mike was certainly gracious to Tommy, but you did sort of get the idea that maybe they're not as close as they used to be either. You hear those rumors.
I did. I actually thought I saw Tommy Lasorda nodding off in the background when Mike was on the podium speaking.
Well, Tommy's getting older. We can't knock him for that. And it was 100 degrees. So I can't kill him on those fronts. But, again, great Hall of Fame weekend.
What about his numbers? Did he put up big numbers as big as he did for the Dodgers? I mean, I don't really recall him putting up big Met numbers.
He did. If Here, I'll pull him up. He really did have some big numbers for them. First example is, so he became a Met in 98. Now, in 98, it was a split season, so he only had 23 homers, 76 RBIs. And he started off the season, his time at Shea slow, and then started picking up. He did hit 348, though, so that's something to keep in mind, 348 batting average. The next year, he was 41-24. The next year, 38-113 with a 324 average. The next year, he was 36-94 with a 300 average. So those are, I mean, these are big numbers, 33-98. These are big numbers for catchers. I mean, unheard of numbers, you know, especially at the age of 33, hitting 33 homers, 98 RBIs. Then he, you know, then he got hurt 1 year. Then his power starts to drop a little, 20 homers, 19 homers, and then eventually San Diego and Oakland. But equally as effective, I think, with the Mets as the Dodgers. The only thing with the Dodgers is he hit 362. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8. And with the Dodgers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 with the Dodgers.
Okay, but not including his minor league, though, with the Dodgers. But
No. We're not including minor leagues with the Dodgers. So, I mean, you really look at it, and it was pretty split. With the Mets, he had 220 homers with the Dodgers, 177. I mean, that's...
Oh, wow,
that's,
more homers with the Mets. Okay.
Yeah, with the Dodgers, he hit 331 lifetime. With the Mets, 296, but he was also an older player. You know, the fact that, you know, he finished out his career with a 308 average for a catcher, unheard of, considering how hard the catching position is. And you could speak to it as much as anybody else, what it does to you, what it takes out of you when it's a hot day and all the different things you have to do as a catcher.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I know I couldn't do it. The up and down, and then catching the knuckleballs and then the 90 miles of fastballs. And like
yeah.
I said, I definitely give Mike Piazza all the credit in the world he deserves to be in the Hall. What a great ambassador for the game. Just hearing him speak, I thought maybe he could be a president of the United States. I mean, very humble.
I know, right? His speech was great. It was a great speech. A lot of people were impressed with that. I was impressed with that. But like I said, I've met him a couple times, and he's just always gracious and more than willing to talk about baseball. So like you said, a great ambassador. It would be great if they did some more with him and sort of got him included in the game a little bit more, because he was even really good, if you remember, on television when he did some color work.
Yeah, we could see him partner with Carroll. So I see he got a big club with Eric Carroll, and it was good to see Eric Carroll make the trip from L.A. Just to see him in there, even though he wasn't going in as a Dodger. You know, Eric Carroll, I think they're really close, and just to see him there, you could tell how close they really are.
All right, so let's talk about the trading deadline. It's like 5 days away. Aroldis Chapman gets traded to the Cubs. The Cubs trade their 19-year-old stud of a shortstop, who the Yankees think is a couple years away. What do you think about this trade, and what do you think about the price for the Cubs? Because Chapman technically is a free agent next year and could go right back to the Yankees.
I think that's the plan. I think the Yankees, the plan, they're probably going to spend big time to get them. But, you know, the Yankees actually are making a run this year. So for them to be selling him at this point,
a little
basically
bit.
Giving up on the year, when this could be a year where, you know, they're over 50 wins right now. Nobody even thought they'd be at this point. So,
no,
it's true.
Cashman talked about that today. Yeah, Cashman talked about that today on the radio, and he said his pitching's been much better lately, but you could tell that production isn't what he expected it to be, or is, like, he expected a certain amount of production out of A-Rod and Texera, and when he didn't get it, I think that's why he made the deal, because he figures, hey, if they're going to make it, they're going to make it. If not, we got to move this asset and get something for him. They did that. They got the best, you know, free agent shortstop, youngest shortstop in the system in baseball, really. And so I think they did well with that. We'll see. I mean, again, he's a prospect. You never know. But he does look great. You know, Profar looked great, too. And so far he hasn't been a great major leaguer. So you think the Yankees did well with this, but we have to wait and see.
Yeah, no, I don't like it. I don't like it. I would never live up let an asset like that go, especially, you know, when we're in the playoff hunt. And
so you like Gleyber Torres. You think you wouldn't let Chapman go, and then if you're the Cubs, you wouldn't let Torres go? Is that what you're saying?
Well, here's the thing. No, I wouldn't let Chapman go for Torres. Not a Torres. I don't think that's a fair trade. I think that basically the Yankees got the short end of the stick on this deal.
Well,
I also
other
think
players.
That Yankees have
a four-player deal.
This Didi Gregorius is actually having a great year for the Yankees. He's really underrated. He's really making people forget about Derek Jeter. I mean, he's slowly but surely putting up better numbers than Jeter. And he's playing good. I don't see this young shortstop coming to the Yankees anytime soon with Gigi there and starting there. He's going to be maybe 3 or 4 years away, depending on, you know, what the Yankees decide what they're going to do, if they're going to give Didi the big money or not.
Right. Okay. So we switch and we talk about the Toronto Blue Jays and. They pick up Melvin Upton Jr. And, you know, 16 homers. He's got another year on his deal. He makes a lot of money. It puts Toronto in the hunt. Again, San Diego's just, you know, if you're a fan of the Padres, 2 years ago they bought everybody. By the half season they started trading everybody because they had a bad year. And now they're just dumping out again. Like, it's tough to be a Padres fan. You have to admit that.
Yeah, but again, the Jays, I don't understand this. The Jays don't need Upton Jr. If anybody, they probably should have got Kemp. I think Kemp is a much better
outfielder. I think Joey Bats won't be there next year. I think that's why.
Yeah, but I just don't think Upton Jr. is the answer there. I really don't. They probably should have got another pitcher. I really love the Aaron Sanchez, and they need somebody to go right along with them.
That's fair. I mean, I get that. All right, so in other action, the Royals called up Raul Mondesi Jr. And so he, you know, we've heard about him. He's 21. He had his PED suspension, 50 games, and now he's going to get a shot. I don't know if he's got the cannon his dad used to have as an arm, but that was he's their number one prospect. He was hitting .304. This could be good for them. I mean, the Royals somehow have managed to stay in it. Maybe a young bat like this sort of gets them back in it.
They need some spark. They lost Lorenzo Cain. He's been hurt for a little bit this year. They need to definitely get him back and get him on track. They're not really getting the year out of Alex Gordon that they probably thought they were going to get. This is Mondesi Jr. It's going to be exciting to see what kind of energy he brings. You know he's going to bring some speed right away. He's going to bring speed. Hopefully we'll be able to see the Royals make a run here. It's going to be tough because the Tigers are playing really good. Verlander is back, kind of pitching probably better than he has in the last couple of years. They got Cabrera, and they're fighting and they're still in it. And the Indians are kind of losing. They've lost Michael Brantley there, so there's a little weakness there. There could be a tight race there going for the final stretch there with the three teams: the Indians, the Tigers, and the Royals right there.
Could be. All right, so now let's talk about some proposed trades, or at least guys that are on the move. Looks like Carlos Beltran is going to be on the move, having a great year, but getting older. And people are thinking the Cleveland Indians, who are having a tremendous year. Like, it's very possible that we could be talking about, after the Cavaliers winning in the NBA, that the Cleveland Indians could be a player and could possibly win it all in Major League Baseball.
I don't see that. I mean, I think they're playing tough.
Hey, they're 56-41.
You've got
to at least give them – they're in first place. You got to give them credit.
Yeah, I give them credit. But like I said, they're playing in a weaker league this year. The Tigers aren't the same. The Royals aren't the same. The Indians are taking advantage of a weak year. And I just don't think they've got the pitching – to get them by. They've got a couple of hitters, but like I said, they're one of their number one hitters, Brantley's down, and I just don't know if they're going to be able to make up the pitching and the hitting when it comes to the playoffs, when it's on the line.
What if they got Carlos Beltran? What would you think of that? I mean, that's a pretty big-time pickup at the deadline if they were able to do that.
I think it'll help him, but I don't think it's enough. I don't think it's enough to get him over the hump of somebody like a Baltimore Orioles or a Boston Red Sox. I'm really thinking those are the two top teams, I think, in the American League that that the teams are going to have to go through. Also, the Texas Rangers, if they pick up a starting pitcher like Sale, you know, they could definitely move up because they got Darvish back. And then you got to watch out for those Astros. I told you before, the Astros are going to be in the thick of things at the end of the year. You know, we're just going to have to see how fast they climb. But I think they're climbing pretty fast. They've got their hitters working on all cylinders. Altuve has proven to be pretty much one of the top five hitters in the game over the last three years.
You were on him before anybody. I mean, you really love this kid right off the bat. I got to give you credit for that.
He's carrying that team. Every single day he shows up, and it's refreshing when you have a player like that on your team who leads you, because now everyone around them is hitting the ball, and like I said, they're a tough team to beat right now, and they're going to be in it right to the end.
All right, so now another player who's potentially going to move is Jeremy Hellickson. That's a pretty good name. He just had a really good start here in Philly. You got to believe that, you know, just shut out the Marlins yesterday, I think it was. So you got to believe there'll be some good value coming back for him.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's a move that somebody needs to make, whether it be Toronto trying to get him or the Indians trying to get him, somebody trying to make a last-minute push to try to get to the playoffs. He's definitely going to help a team. He's got an ERA under 4, so he's going to keep your offense in the game. You know, all you got to need, you know, score 3 or 4 runs, and you got a chance to win. And he can help any major league team with those kind of numbers.
No question. All right. So a deal that we're hearing brewing, but and literally brewing because it's the Milwaukee Brewers, is the possibility of Jonathan Lucroy going to the Mets. Now, the Brewers did not want to take a deal of Lucroy for Travis d'Arnaud straight up, and I don't blame them. Lucroy's a little better than that. The Mets have said while they're going to make moves, they're not going to give up any big assets, which doesn't make New York fans happy because when you're in New York and you have a chance to win, you should do that. Lucroy's got 13 homers, 50 RBIs. He's hitting 300, but it's not like you're getting Gary Carter here. How much would you give up for Lucroy? I mean, how much of a prospect besides d'Arnaud would you give up for Jonathan Lucroy?
Well, you'd probably have to give up a young pitcher. I don't think the Brewers would take anything less than some type of starting young pitcher. I would get him. See, that's one of the weak spots I think that the Mets have had all year. I mean, that's been a big question mark with d'Arnaud, whether or not he's going to come through and stay healthy and if he's going to be able to hit enough. And he's actually having one of his worst years ever. So, yeah, straight up, I would never take the deal straight up. So I would take Arnaud with the pitcher.
Well, that sounds like something that might happen. I mean, look, he used 13 homers, 69 RBIs 2 years ago, hitting .301. That's pretty much what he's doing this year. He's got more homers this year. Last year, he only played in 103 games, so it's hard to judge him. His best year was 1882. And 280. I mean, you know, when we're talking about catchers now, it's hard to find a catcher with really any offense. Agreed?
Agreed. Yeah, where's the Mike Piazzas out there? There's just really not more. And, you know, the game has changed because I think Mike Piazza has changed the game because teams now will not have a Mike Piazza. If Mike Piazza couldn't come up because the game has changed, they're not going to sacrifice or hide a catcher anymore. They're not going to allow any pass balls. They're not going to allow someone to steal bases on them like they used to live with Mike Piazza. They're not. They'd rather have a defensive catcher that will hit maybe 180 and have a pop time of about 1-8 and just kind of shut down that run game and keep that defense first.
Yeah, and he'll throw out a few more runners and play a little better defense, but I don't know if that's the move that gets the Mets over the top, and that's the worry, and that's why in the end I can't give up any of my great pitchers. I can't – like Syndergaard's on the mound now. He's throwing lights out already. You can't give up a guy like that. You can't give up Wheeler. You can't, you know, so you have to give up a guy in, like, lower A ball or something like that. They did draft a few pitchers the last couple of years. Maybe it'll be one of those guys. To me, that's the only way you can make that deal, if you're the Mets.
Well, here's another thing. If I was the Mets general manager, I would say, hey, I'll take LaCroix and your little young shortstop. And then I may throw in, you know, Wheeler, one of my top back-end pitchers, maybe even Nisi. Our bots.
Okay, and see, that's something where I think they could work with. Cabrera's been really good this year, but they, if they could get younger at that position, they could make Cabrera the everyday third baseman. I mean, it's not a hard thing to do. And then just make Flores the second baseman next year full-time when Walker's not there and just have him, you know, basically play utility for the rest of the year this year. I think that would work. I think that's a gutsy call, but I would do it because, again, at the end of the day, the Mets can't hold on to all these pitchers. Some of them are going to still get hurt. Some of them are not going to have the careers you hope they were going to have. And sometimes you have to get the value when you can. And the fact that Wheeler will be pitching, in a, you know, probably by the middle of August to the end of August, that's good. And I think the Brewers would be happy with that, knowing that they'd have him for next year.
And here's another one you may want to throw in there, Harvey. It may be Mets time. I know he's injured right now, but, hey, throw him in the deal as a, like a little bonus thing. It's just like I said, anything to get that young shortstop. When you look at Milwaukee.
Yeah, you know what? If I had to throw in Matt Harvey, I would do it. That would be a risk for, you know, for the Brewers to take because he's just had that rib surgery and you have to hope he can come back. But I agree with you. I think that's something because, again, right now the Mets could use an upgrade and a full-time short, like a not a full-time because they have a full-time shortstop. A franchise shortstop would be great. And right now Jose Reyes at third is just average. I mean, he's hitting 240. He's not the same Jose Reyes. That's pretty obvious. Now, when he gets on the base paths, he doesn't steal anymore, but he can take extra bases better than some of their other players. But he's just a good utility player for them right now. I mean, really, that's all we're talking about. So at the end of the day, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. So who else do you think? Any other teams do you think that need to make a move?
The Dodgers. The Dodgers need something. I mean, Kershaw's kind of, they put him on the shelf. You know, they need some offense. They need another pitching. I would like to see the Dodgers make a big move right now because they're in it. They're in the thick of the hunt, and they've got a young manager.
Hey, how could the Dodgers be in it? You said they wouldn't be, although I said they wouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, no. They've really overplayed themselves. I don't know how they're in it, but they're
without
in
Kershaw,
it. And, you know,
without Kershaw, that's amazing.
When they get Kershaw back, but like I said, I wish they can get Adrian Gonzalez back and get him back on track. I don't know where he's kind of disappeared this year, but
I know.
Man, I wish he'd come alive or they would bring somebody up with just some life. They need some help. They need some help, and I'd like to see him make a big move.
Pirates, Marlins, they could use a move. Like you said, Detroit. For as long as they hang in it, Chris Sale will probably be on the move, especially after ripping up his jersey. I don't care what excuse he gives. If you can't pitch with a jersey that they give you, then you're not a major leaguer. And if it's a situation of you can't pitch with the shirt out because you're used to having it tucked in, then something's wrong with you. Sorry.
Yeah, no, Chris Sale and the management there at the White Sox, they've been going at it all year long from spring training when they had the kid in the locker room, they kicked out LaRoche's son.
Sale was a big friend.
And I don't know if he was the godson or the godfather of the son, but it really affected Sale. Sale was pretty upset at management, and they kind of been upset at each other all year long. Sale's kind of been good at just focusing on wins. And he's been getting the job. But, yeah, ripping up the uniform, he kind of just took it a little bit too far. And management let him know that he's definitely not running the show, put him on the 5-game suspension there. They didn't have to.
Yep.
But they did it themselves.
All right, Neek, if you got something to push, push it. We got 30 seconds.
Yeah, just want to say a special shout-out thanks to Clearview Construction. Construction your way, do it your way, energy efficiency.
All right. Sounds good. Nico, we'll see you next week.
Okay. Thanks, Russ.
Take care.
Everyone has a story to tell. Take Jen. She can see all the films she wants, whenever she wants, at Cineworld. From Finding Dory and the BFG to Suicide Squad. She gets 10% off all her cinema snacks, Baskin-Robbins, sweets and treats, you name it. Plus 25% off at some of her favourite restaurants, like Frankie and Benny's. That's Jen's unlimited story. Start yours today when you join Cineworld Unlimited. From just $17.40 a month. Love cinema? Join the club. Sign up today at your local Cineworld or visit cineworld.com.